I don't know. I think after she took that first bite, it was full of regret and remorse and like immediate, like it was a bad taste.
You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields. Welcome back, everybody. I have two very special guests with me today while Scott is enjoying some time. I don't know. Do you call Alaska abroad or what?
I mean,
that's pretty abroad from here.
It's pretty far.
Still in the United States, but still abroad.
Is the sun setting for him right now or ever?
It's like late at night. Erica, Joni, welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Thanks.
In a word, describe how it feels to be done.
Free. Free at last.
Disbelief. Like, is it really done?
Right. Kind of anticlimactic, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, just kind of, or skeptical.
Skeptical. Very skeptical.
I'm going to go ahead and enjoy this moment of freedom.
Mm-hmm. I like it,
I'm going to cling to it.
I need you to pass some of that optimism over here.
Cling to it. Yes. I left my lobbyist badge at home.
Good
and
for
felt
you.
Good. Felt yeah. good.
I thought I lost mine the other day. I had a panic moment and thought I lost it. And then, why am I panicking? I have to take another one next year another one. So
you have to do one every year.
They issue a new one every year, but you don't have to retake your picture.
I had an email from the mayor of Hampton, Mayor Brown, Robert Brown, and he complimented the podcast. He said he loves to listen to the podcast, and that's where he gets a lot of his information.
Hello, Mayor.
How about that? So shout out to Mayor Robert in Hampton. Before we get started, y'all know I'm going to quiz you a little bit.
Okay.
Everybody, get ready.
I told you how much I hate trivia.
You have. And my kids have started this thing where they look up trivia questions like online.
Yeah.
And we have to sit at night, like at some point in time, like after supper, and they ask questions. And they could be movie trivia. I'm a lot better at that. Historical trivia, science, all that. And it's like, I mean, how much does a blue whale weigh? Like, exactly.
I'm out.
And already. Mary Alton is always, my daughter's always the one that reads the questions. And so she's like, nope, 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 higher, lower, nope. I'm like, just tell me.
I can just tell me the answer.
Just tell me. How much does it weigh? I'm sure it differs by whale.
Oh, wait. Can I say this on air? Speaking of Mary Alton, my son is almost 9. And Casey had sent a picture of Mary Alton and Drew because they went to a wedding
this past weekend.
And Connor is looking over my shoulder. And he said, who's that? I said, that's Mary Alton. I said, isn't she cute? And he was like, And like did this like blush face and walked out of the room. And I was like, ooh.
Okay.
How about that? She's in her wedding finery.
Connor with the game. I like it.
His face was so red, guys. Oh, it was so cute. He's going to kill me.
I do like trivia, though. So.
Speaking of game, let's play some trivia.
Okay, here we go.
Joni's favorites.
I get it wrong, but I love it. I do.
So there are a lot of famous people, whether they're famous for their acting ability or political or, you know, lots of different things, athletic ability. There are a lot of famous people from South Carolina. So I'm going to ask y'all, and you can tell me later on in the show. So we're going to talk about the serious stuff, and then we'll get back to this. What town in South Carolina is the birthplace of actress Viola Davis? Keep it to yourself. Think about it. The answer to this question was an answer in a previous trivia question that I believe Scott got partially correct, Mr. Producer, if I'm not mistaken. I think he got it partially correct. So y'all think about that, the birthplace of Viola Davis. I think she talks about it in her book.
And I listened to her book, and I can't remember. I have an idea, but I don't think it's right.
Now, Joni.
Yes.
Budget vetoes.
All 11, man.
All 11. It's going to take a while.
He had to dig deep.
So Governor McMaster, once they ratified the budget bills, he had 5 days, excluding Sunday, to issue his line item vetoes. He has the ability to line item veto the budget only. He can veto whole bills like he did the audit bill, but overridden. And so he can pull out little pieces of the budget that he doesn't like to veto. Joni, tell us what he did.
He vetoed, the first veto was with the Department of Education. This was one that Senator Shealy put in for $400,000. And the reason he vetoed this is it used public money for private entities.
Okay.
And it dealt with healthcare and some education tools. But he said this set a bad precedence to use, again, public money for private schools and other.
And in the vetoes this year, if it was an earmark or like a special thing that a senator had their name on, he put that senator or house member's name on the veto.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Yes, he did. And there was, you know, a couple more with education, Department of Education, Senator Stevens. It was for $300,000. This was, most of his vetoes were non-recurring dollars, if you notice that.
Yeah.
I think actually all of them were non-recurring dollars. Again, this was just one that he said allocated and expended funds for the Education Oversight Committee, and he didn't felt like that was a good use of those funds.
Mm-hmm.
So another easy veto, but some of the, I'm not going to bore everybody with all 11, but one that he had to really dig deep, and I didn't even know this one was in there. Where did she go? Representative Chandra Dillard, statewide revenue, parent cafe, $30,000. I mean, that seems like a very small amount. Just give it to her.
Right. It just seems like a minuscule amount of money that can really make a difference in what she's trying to do, right?
He just said he vetoed this earmark due to the fact that the sponsor is the chair and the board of directors of this collaborative.
Oh, okay.
So
he did some research.
He did some research on that one. Yeah. So maybe next year, Chandra maybe ask someone else to put that one in for her since she's the chair.
There was one veto that may have made sense, and that was the Law Enforcement Center for Excellence at USC.
Right.
He struck that veto because he said that that was fully funded in last year's budget.
So the proviso he took out was not needed? Is that what it said?
Yes.
I think it did say that it was
no longer needed.
No longer needed.
It was funded in last year's state budget. So to me, that makes sense.
That one does. That was veto number six that Erica just told you guys about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is doing some digging
right there. They went through that. I mean, you know, he does have a budget office and he does have a budget director, so they are involved every step of the way. He did he really did heap a lot of praise on the General Assembly for funding a lot of his priorities, and about how some members were transparent with their earmarks, and he listed some of those members in his veto letter, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and
it's nice to have everybody get along.
There was one in there that dealt with statewide revenue from Representative J.A. Moore. It appropriated $275,000 for an organization that's based in California, and they had done something very similar the year before, and according to his veto message, this agency or entity did not submit their distribution of funds until February, and it wasn't cleared until May. So they were late on reporting, and that was only $25,000.
Right.
So why give them $275,000?
Right.
And
not reporting.
Yeah.
So next, the governor has issued his vetoes. We do know that the General Assembly has no plans to return anytime soon to take up the vetoes. So, right. That was our, that was Erica knocking on the wooden table that we're all sitting around just in case. We need a little extra luck. So that means, and Joni, correct me if I'm wrong, that means that the vetoes in the budget just get held. That money does not get distributed until they come back to deal with whether they override or sustain.
That is correct.
And so when the budget goes into effect in July, we're seeing state employee raises, teacher pay raises, local government fund. And the most important thing that we all worked on was the absence of the short-term rental.
You will not see that.
That was not in the final budget. So we'll talk about the bill in a little bit, but that was not anything we have to worry about in the budget. So whenever they come back, so if they don't come back until January, then those vetoes just hold until then?
That is my understanding, Casey. Yep.
And because the House is the originating body, if they override the veto, then it goes to the Senate. So the Senate only deals with the bills
after
the House override. If the House sustains the veto, then the Senate doesn't get it because it's been sustained by the originating body.
Yes.
was a little bit of
helpful.
Yeah, I got into it. I didn't mean to.
No, I appreciate that.
I didn't mean to. But that's kind of how that goes.
Yep.
So we've got a budget before the end of the fiscal year. Minus only 11 vetoes.
Minus these 11 vetoes.
That were like a little over $1 million?
Yeah, it wasn't a lot.
Is that right?
Yeah. Not a lot.
All right. Now, let's talk about some past bills.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Let's talk about some past bills. I tell you, y'all were rock stars this year. Y'all, this session, y'all were a force to be reckoned with.
A lot of emotions this session.
A lot of emotions.
Excited. Shocked.
Oh,
sad.
I like the shot. Shocked. Mm-hmm.
A little bit of, oh, no, he didn't.
Right.
With the veto.
Eric, I think that was a lot of, oh, no, he didn't.
Oh, no, you didn't. And, okay, we're good. It's we've been through it.
Had those, like, mild panics, you know, like that instant, like, oh, my gosh, what is going to happen? Or what are they doing?
There are things that we haven't even talked about. I mean, I'm not going to try to get into it. Right. But there was a meeting the day before. Scott calls me and was like, this just got added to the agenda.
Right.
I called the representative. We got them to stall. Like, it was wild.
It was wild. And then it was like, you mean they vetoed it? And then we knew that the veto was coming on audits. Let's talk about that for a second.
I didn't know it was coming.
So Scott texted us like from a meeting or something. And he was like, he vetoed 31.
Yeah. That's when I found out.
And we were all like, what? Well, that was before the message was read across the deck, like before they even went into session.
That was our heads up, maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah, that was our heads up. So Erica gets up on the phone and she's like, okay, I'm going to handle this.
Like a rock star.
Okay, I'm going to do it. Like everybody's working on it. And then it gets read across the desk and we had several people in the office be like, what? What is happening? And we were like,
calm down. It's all right.
It's already been handled.
It's good.
This is going to be overridden. It's going to, like, just everybody chill. And then it was taken
down. But his veto message was strong.
It was strong and wrong.
Yeah, but this taught me a lot because when the Senate concurred with the House's amendment, the county amendment, at that point, I think I did my George Jefferson dance.
Right.
I'm like, and we're done. And I'm like, we're good. And a week later, I'm like, no, he didn't.
I know.
And so I guess, you know, don't celebrate until it's time to celebrate.
That's right.
So
that's
that was
right.
My lesson there. I think I counted my chicken before it hatched. But we got to work and we were, that day, were assured that both bodies would override it, and they did. So
you need the pin.
Now I can celebrate.
Right. That's
Erica
right.
Erica needs the pin that the governor used to sign the.
But he didn't sign it.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Because
his veto pin.
His veto pin. You need
All right, Erica. So that bill, the municipal audit bill, Senate Bill 31, Act Number 71, because it's been issued an act number. That will allow cities and towns with less than $500,000 in total revenue to submit a financial compilation statement instead of a full-blown audit.
Yes.
So what if I am the mayor of a town that has less than $500,000, I've got some outstanding local government fund revenue that I haven't been getting over the last several years because I can't afford to do an audit.
Yeah.
What do I do now?
So I would say hold tight now because we are finalizing a meeting, and by we, it'll be myself, Scott, the state auditor, George Kennedy, and the treasurer's office. And we're going to kind of walk through next steps. A cool thing that George Kennedy did was an RFP to CPAs across the state that could assist local governments complete this compilation of financial statements. So we're going to walk through the bill, what's expected of local governments. There's some agreements that the treasurer's office and the auditor need to come to. We're going to be a part of that conversation. That'll be the first one.
Okay.
From there, we're going to invite to the table the South Carolina Association of CPAs.
Okay.
Because they exist. And we're going to educate CPAs across the state on what this bill is, how they can benefit or help small cities and towns, and then use the fall to educate our members, pairing them with resources such as a CPA that can assist them
and
according to the state standards.
This is optional, right? So
it's optional.
If these smaller towns are doing an audit and they can afford it and they're comfortable with it, they do not have to switch. It's totally up to council, right?
Yes, unless And there are also federal programs that require a full-blown audit. So if you are a smaller city or town and you get money from DC, pay attention to those rules around those funds, because they may require that you have to do an audit. So this just gives you, I know this is cliche, but another tool in the toolbox to help small cities and towns. And I did hear from a mayor that thanked us for looking out for the small guys.
That's awesome.
So that made me feel good. I think they feel that sometimes they get lost in the sauce.
Right.
So to have our association focus on something that protects or is a benefit to them was big for the smaller cities and towns. And we heard that.
And one more thing I want to talk about before I jump to Joni. Well, several things. The squat trucks. What is happening? I know that there's like 180 days and then 180 days. Yes. So you get all this like time. But so what is going on with that? What do people need to know?
Yeah, I'll explain why we have almost a year there. It, the bill was originally giving police departments or 180 days before this bill went into law. That was because, A, apparently it's not cheap to revert your trucks back to normal height.
Hello, Casey. Business there.
We wanted to start it. Joni and I wanted to start an auto repair shop so we could fix the squat trucks.
Yeah. So the 180 days was always going to be just a warning period. Well, during sub, the lobbyists for the DMV came forward and asked for an additional 180 days because they are updating their system and just needed some more time there. So now we have two periods of 180 days. So this is a great time to start educating your residents on what's about to take place. I know of a few mayors or police chiefs that have gone on the local television stations and shared what's coming down the pipe, because there are penalties attached to this. You can get your driver's license suspended after the third.
And there's definitely a fine.
There are fine. Your first offense is a $100 fine. Second is $200. Third is the $300 and your license suspended for a year.
Jeez.
So the DMV asked for time to get their system up to speed. But a lot of people, I don't know if they know what's happening yet. I'm thinking about the gentleman who almost ran over a former colleague.
I know, yeah, he had no idea.
And she tried to tell him in the moment, your time's up, buddy. Right. And he's like, what are you talking about? So people still don't know. So this is a good opportunity to get some PR with local radio or television stations to notify
and
folks.
I think that would be a good message for police chiefs, you know, to try to get out to their residents. You know, some people may not have any squat trucks.
We need bumper stickers. No more squatties.
No more squat. No more Carolina squat. I was looking up that act number and I don't think we have one yet for 108, because that's where I'm going to pivot to next.
I have it. I don't
the act it. Number. They hadn't assigned one.
They haven't. Yeah, they haven't assigned. I have the bill in front of me though.
All right, Joni, let's go to the first responder death benefit. That was one of the conference reports. One of three, bond reform, the first responder death benefit, and the shoot 'em up electric utility. Those were three, along with the budget, that were approved kind of in a flurry on the last day, last week, I believe, when they were trying to get conference reports done. So tell me, what does 108 do, and what do we need to know? What do our people need to know?
So I'm going to clarify something, because Erica and I were in the SCAMA meeting. What is that? The first morning meeting.
The manager's roundtable.
Thank you. Manager's roundtable. And we talked about this, and I said, guys, I just briefly looked over this. It looks like anyone who's included in the pre-retirement system. I should have read further. Anyone included in the pre-retirement system that is defined as a first responder.
Okay.
So this is only first responders and police officers. It's $150,000. I did mention this in the meeting. Suicide is not included, death by suicide.
Okay.
Now, this conference committee did ask for free conference powers, and we've explained this over and over again, so I won't go into detail with that. But the reason they asked for those free conference powers is they wanted to change the effective date to May 11th. Of this year to include that firefighter who lost his life in the line of duty.
In Irmo. Yes. Firefighter Mullen.
And this $150,000 extra death benefit is on top of the federal $75,000 that you receive and any other accidental death benefits that your fire department, you know, contributes to. So this is additional money. There is some paperwork that you have to fill out, a beneficiary and everything, but this is already in effect.
And this is for police officers, firefighters, anybody classified as a first responder. Yep. How do they define first responders?
Well, they've got a whole section in here of a first responder, Casey. First responder is emergency medical technician.
Okay.
It's law enforcement officer, correction officer, and constables that are appointed.
Right.
So there's a lot of people that are included in here.
And firefighters. Included. Okay. Yep. Well, this seems to be a wonderful benefit for something that is so tragic.
Absolutely.
Because nobody wants to lose their loved one, especially those that give their life every day and do the job that keeps us safe and all that. We also included in the budget is that additional money for PTSD, right?
Yes, $750,000 recurring. And actually, that happened last year. And the Firefighter mm-hmm. Association is the agency that came to the Senate and asked for more money because they had so many people participating in
utilizing
the program.
That's wonderful.
And they needed to pay out more. So mm-hmm. Because they increased theirs, they increased the law enforcement as well.
Mm-hmm. That is such a wonderful benefit that our state provides.
Absolutely.
I hate that people have to utilize it.
Yeah. But I'm glad it's there.
I'm glad it's there when they need it. Anything else? Erica, you want to talk about bond reform? Anything that you want to say about that, I mean, I know they made some changes in free conference to add some things to it. Is that anything that
nothing that our cities and towns need to look out for? It did clarify that SLED, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, will govern the electronic monitoring system.
Yeah.
So you see elevated usage of ankle monitors when it comes to folks being out on bond. Also, a lot of changes for bail bondsmen and mm-hmm. having to get property and casualty insurance there. But hopefully we'll see the quote unquote revolving door closed
right.
within our cities and towns. The governor doesn't feel like
right.
this bill
goes.
He
wasn't excited about it.
He wasn't excited, but he did not veto that.
Right.
Because it's something
right.
To keep offenders off of the streets. And if an offender does get back on the street, there's that ankle monitoring or that electronic monitoring where people know where they are. So we'll see what happens with bond reform and if it indeed reformed anything.
Y'all, let's talk briefly about bills that are still sitting out there. Short-term rentals. It is still in the House 3M
subcommittee.
Okay.
Yeah.
It has not moved. It had two hearings. That's where it will stay.
Let's talk about this. I will not name names, but I received a text message from a member who thought that the bill was dead. They were celebrating in this text that the short-term rental proviso was not in the budget. And I said, okay. Yes, now we just have to be vigilant next session on the bill. And the response from a member was, what are you talking about? What bill? And I said, Representative Hewitt's short-term rental bill. And they were like, where is that bill? In your
3M.
Subcommittee, yeah. sir. And the response was, I thought that was dead. And so.
Well, in all fairness, this session.
Correct.
You know, like this session.
Well, maybe that's what they meant.
Like for 2023.
That makes
like,
me
that
feel
was,
better.
Yeah, like yeah. for 2023. Maybe that's.
Well, no, because I said we have to be vigilant next session. And they were like, what are you talking about?
Oh,
so. Yeah. So we got to, and that's a great lesson. We cannot sleep on this.
Correct.
We cannot sleep on this bill. This is something that our board and groups of elected officials, mayors have said, we have to have the regulatory ability.
Yeah.
We can't, this is not something to compromise, but celebrating that it's not in the budget, 100%.
Well, and staff 100%. Told us that we're going to work on this during the interim, so we'll see.
We'll see what happens.
What
and this
that
is
looks
a
like.
This is a full group effort. This is not just one person on staff. Like this
yeah.
is everybody because we all have different kind of pieces and parts, and so everybody is working on this. I want everybody to feel good about it, although it is still looming.
Well, and it's not a one body effort
yeah,
either.
That's
it's,
exactly right.
It was in the House for a few sessions, but now the Senate is starting to sniff around
mm-hmm.
and become
that's
interested
right.
in this.
And it's not a one staffer. Yeah. There's so many staffers.
There's
involved.
So many people yeah. involved with this. So it's going to be. We're going to have to manage this mm-hmm. across both chambers with different staff people. It is going to be. It's going to probably, I mean, if I had to guess, one of our biggest issues for 24.
Absolutely. Don't you agree? I agree.
Hate crimes is still out there.
Yes. I'm optimistic there. We know that there were 4 senators who objected to that moving forward. That's now down to 2.
Okay.
We received intel that a Senate chairman was whipping behind the scenes, and he was able to successfully get 2 senators off of the bill.
It's amazing.
Excellent.
Ran into a champion of this bill, Republican champion of this bill, and he felt as though we were in good shape. I don't know what that means. I don't know what conversations have been had that we don't know about.
Right.
But I went to him and I said, I'm sorry, we just couldn't help you get it there this mm-hmm. session. And he smiled.
Got so close.
Yeah, he smiled and said, oh, no, we're going to get it. I feel good. Okay.
Erica, aren't we one of only 2 states, us and Wyoming, that do not have hate crime legislation?
I will say it again.
Montana or Wyoming? Wyoming.
I think it's Wyoming. Yeah, but Alabama, you guys.
Right.
Mississippi, they have hate crimes legislation before South Carolina. That just doesn't sound right to even say out loud. Right.
No.
So hopefully 2024 will be the year.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Let's not have this in common with Wyoming.
We've also had so many cities contact members of the General Assembly to support hate crimes legislation because it's the right thing to do, but also because it's hurting our cities economically. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of support, a lot of grassroots support throughout the state for this bill.
Can I share this? Representative Todd Rutherford, the House Minority Leader, did a video that I thought was really telling. And this was right after the NCAA Sweet 16 tournament in Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
And he shared how our state would have never have been able to host that back when the Confederate flag flew atop of the state house.
Right.
But that was a big deal that came down. And so economic opportunities poured into our state.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned, you know, what could happen if we were to go ahead and pass this bill? What other economic opportunities are we passing up? Because we don't have it in place, but Georgia and North Carolina, they do have it.
And people are going to our neighboring states and not coming here.
Yeah.
When we all know we better than Georgia and North Carolina.
Beautiful beaches, beautiful mountains.
Hello. We have it all.
I'm saying.
We have it all. We've also got several bills, and we won't get into them, but election standardization, that's a bill that passed the House. Mm-hmm. It's in the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's for municipal election standards, police retiree return to work, tort reform, that never got out of a Senate subcommittee. The workers' compensation, the mental bill, and I've got to say, and I don't think I've ever blessed the heart of a piece of legislation, but the enclave annexation bill, bless its heart. It was introduced and there it sits. That's also in 3M. I don't know what to say about that.
Busy year next year.
Busy year.
Or will it be? Because it's an election for both sides. So.
And listen, phenomenal segue. Mm-hmm. 2024 is an election year for both the House and the Senate.
Yep.
House members go through an election every 2 years, Senate every 4. Y'all, the landscape looks different.
It does.
It looks different than even 2 years ago, but even 4 years ago for the senators.
Yeah.
They have debated abortion 38 times. They have debated some pretty inflammatory social issues that have really put people, kind of in a position, you know, they've really,
they're polarizing
a lot of
bills,
polarizing mm-hmm. issues. Mm-hmm. There is the newly formed, and we've talked about this on the show, the newly mm-hmm. formed House Freedom Caucus. The OG Freedom Caucus by some super conservative right-wing Republicans, and they sued in order to be able to raise money like a caucus, just like the House Democratic Caucus, the House Republican Caucus. And very recently, a federal judge agreed with them that they could. Y'all both jump in. How is that going to change the 2024 elections if it stands?
I think we saw already the members of the Freedom Caucus celebrating they deemed this a huge victory for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think unless, you know, something stops them, they're now able to recruit candidates and to fund campaigns of candidates both in the House and the Senate They've already published a list of senators they're going after.
I was they did? Like on their website?
They did. This was during the abortion debate. They singled out senators, Republican and Democrat, but Republican that did not vote their way on the abortion bill. So now you're going to see them getting involved in recruiting and funding candidates. So
bad timing for everyone else. This coming in an election year,
right?
That they're allowed to do this,
right?
So they will use those funds.
The House Ethics Committee met on Monday of this week, and they got kind of a briefing from their attorney. And while the federal judge cannot change laws in South Carolina, the only people that can change laws are the General Assembly. So do they change the ethics law? We've seen debates on ethics bills that take years to change. Do they change it to exclude them? Do they rewrite it to put parameters on themselves and the Freedom Caucus?
That's what I would do if I was on the other end of this, because they have the votes right now to do it. So be interesting to see.
Do they come back for a special session we just celebrated about 30 minutes ago?
I know, knock on wood and everything.
But do they come back?
Maybe. But listen, if your counsel is advising you on your other options, they're not just advising you to say it's A, B, or C. They're doing that for a reason.
Right.
They're trying to tell you maybe this is your only viable option. So
they could sue. Isn't that right? Or they could counter, they could appeal the decision.
They can appeal the decision.
Okay.
Yep. But when they could appeal, that stops everything until the appeal is complete.
That is correct.
And or they could change current ethics law.
Yeah.
Isn't that correct?
The General Assembly could.
Right. Right.
Those are the options.
And you know, they could do both at the same time. They can change the ethic laws and appeal.
Start working on that and do the appeal.
Absolutely.
I just, you know, we have such, and for years people have talked about dark money, the money that is flowing into campaigns that is not, how do you describe it? It's not regulated.
Yeah.
And it's from people a lot of times out of state that try to have influence.
That want to have business influence here in the state of South Carolina.
Right. And to elect people that will vote in the way that they need them to.
Yeah.
I don't know, y'all. This is going to be
something to watch for sure.
Oh, it's definitely something to watch. I would suggest that our listener read up on this issue, re-listen to the Ethics Committee meeting that was last Monday, the discussion. We need to understand, voters need to understand about the climate right now.
Yeah.
We don't need to just walk in and blindly support. We've got to understand the issues and the people that are running for office. I do. Listen, this is me, Casey Fields, talking. I always look at the person. I don't care what party you belong to. I want to know what you think as a person and what you believe and what you're going to do. And, you know, I don't really.
And what you've done in the past.
Right.
Because if you're a flippy, floppy fish.
Right.
I don't.
What did y'all remember? Who was it? Was it President Clinton that called President Bush like a waffle? Didn't he start that with the whole?
I don't know.
With the waffle, because President Bush would waffle around, and then President Clinton beat him because he did. It was the waffle. I just remember that. I don't know why. I was an extremely young voter.
I do not like a waffle.
Trying to.
Oh, I love me a waffle.
No. I love a waffle.
Oh, okay. You don't like a person.
I don't like a
waffle.
Exactly.
Okay, got it. I was like, wait a minute.
No, Erica, I love a waffle.
Whoa, Joni. I thought we were all friends here. I love a good Belgian waffle.
I'll make a statement, and you guys tell me if you agree or not. I feel that the majority of South Carolina voters, or a large swath of them, are completely clueless to what's happening at the state house in terms of the crazy that we're seeing.
Agreed. Everything. Okay. Agreed. Yes.
So Joni and I sat on a panel, and we were explaining like actual things that have happened. And these are some local leaders, and they're looking like,
that are informed.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Did that really happen? And we're like, it really did. There are some people who take on the attitude, a few attitudes where, whatever, I'll just focus on my world right here and not worry about what happens there. There are some, and we appreciate it, where they're like, Joni and Erica, Casey Scott, they'll tell me what I need to know. But I would really love for some to just Tune in a little bit and see for yourself what's happening.
And I have to remind myself about this. Like, we work in this bubble where we know everything. We know more than sometimes we want to know.
Yeah.
And the general public, they might be reading the newspaper or looking at the newspaper online or watching the news at 6 o'clock every night. And that's not the whole story.
Yeah. My grandfather used to say there's three sides to the story, yours, mine, and the truth.
Right. That's right. I mean, you've got to lean in. Mm-hmm. You've got to just read and research. And I know that the average voter, I mean, y'all, this is our job, but as people that are involved in the community, we've got family, we've got this job, we've got all these other things we're involved in. I agree with you. I think we need to encourage people to really start paying attention now. Yeah, Don't wait until next June for the primaries.
Yes. Right.
Start paying attention now, because people are going to start declaring candidacy as soon as they can.
But still, like Erica said, lean on us, because we are junkies when it comes to this. And we will probably have a folder with all the opponents.
And we keep track of all of that. I have a huge spreadsheet because we look at who
it's
held
just fun
the seat.
To watch them.
Who, you know, and where that's going to go, because we have to figure out how that's going to affect our issues. You know, we always want to support people that are going to support local government.
Right. For example, and I share this at the conference, we had the House and Senate versions of squat trucks. They were identical.
Right.
Word for word.
Right.
But one body was upset that the other body got theirs out first. And so it was that kind of back and forth. And it took a bill that should have passed in a month. It took about 3 months to get it done, just based on who's going to get the credit.
Proud of authorship.
And personalities.
Yeah.
You know, it was, that's, yeah.
The 3 months for one of our priorities that would benefit cities and towns, save lives in cities and towns, but got caught up because which body gets the credit.
And y'all, that happens more than I'd like to even say on this podcast.
Mm-hmm. It does.
It happens more, the personalities, the credit, the, you know, you do this, you're holding this bill up, or you made me mad about this, then I'm going to make you mad about this.
I remember asking Scott, why would they do something like this? And Scott just looked at me, he was like, oh,
I know. Oh, cute kid.
I know.
He's like, because they can.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Right. I feel like I'm in the Matrix. I told somebody this last week, and Morpheus gave me the red pill,
and
I can't unsee what I'm seeing here. But I'm grateful to have this front row seat. And I just really wish others were leaning in a little bit more.
Agreed. Have you had a chance to discuss and to think about where Viola Davis was born?
You was kind. You was smart. You was important.
I'm going to say Allendale.
Allendale? No.
I'm going to say St. Matthews.
That's correct.
Okay. If y'all have not listened to her memoir,
so don't read it, listen to it.
Listen to it. I think she won Grammy. She won a Grammy for it.
Oh, wow.
For the audio version of the book. It's just.
Well, I need to listen. I usually like to read a book instead of listening to it, but I think with her voice, reading it, I think that would be interesting.
Good. I'm a visual person. I need to read it.
She was born in the small rural town of St. Matthews in Calhoun County, Mr. Producer. Or is that Orangeburg County? I believe it's Calhoun County. And I guess she moved away at some point in time.
Very young.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't spend much time in South Carolina, but we still claim her.
Right. That's right.
You're ours.
Of course.
You're ours.
Y'all, is there anything else that we need to talk about? So the year-end report, we're working on that right now. That will be out at the annual meeting in paper version and online. We'll also have that at all of our regional advocacy meetings in September and October. We will, by that time, you think we're going to know more about the municipal audit?
Yes.
And, you know, kind of where we are with squat trucks and all the different, you know, things that we know. We're probably going to know something about the ethics changes, if there's going to be any. So we'll have a lot to talk about in September and October. We will all be at the annual meeting in Greenville in July. We have a legislative wrap-up session. We're also going to record a live podcast during that time to show you, for Mr. Producer, to show you how it's done. But also to get a good podcast episode out of it, just to show you how much fun we have. But for in between now and then, we are available. Mm-hmm. We are researching now. We're researching bills and we're starting to build coalitions for bills that are still out there. And we are here with questions about budget vetoes or municipal audits or anything that you might need.
We're your friends.
Parting words, everybody, on this summer solstice.
Pack an umbrella.
God, isn't that the truth? It should be beautiful and sun shining. It's but raining. Instead, isn't this the longest day of the year, the longest day of sunlight? Of the solstice, yeah. I got married on the winter solstice, which is the darkest, shortest, coldest day of the year.
Really?
I did. Okay. How about that?
Oh, I like it.
Everybody, stay tuned to From the Dome to Your Home podcast for all the latest updates on what's going on at the State House. Thanks for listening. Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.